Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm home healthcare news reporter, Joyce Fumakinwa. Today's episode is with Randy Klein, the CEO of Vesta Healthcare. In this conversation, Klein walks us through Vesta's unique business model and what was missing in the market before Vesta Healthcare came onto the scene, and why the caregiver is key to the company. Want to sponsor episodes of this podcast? Contact A. Donlin at WTWHmedia.com to learn more. That's A-D-O-N-L-A-N at WTWHmedia.com. Now let's jump into the episode. Hello, everybody. Today we have Randy Klein from Vesta Healthcare. Randy, where are you joining us from today?
New York, New York.
Well, thank you for being here. I want to just jump right into the conversation. I think that Vesta Healthcare has a very unique business model. For the listeners that are unfamiliar with Vesta, though, can you go into detail about your company's business model and how your company works with home care providers?
Sure. So we are a specialized medical group for people with long-term home care. And we have a highly integrated network of non-medical providers, particularly personal care agencies, but other provider types as well. We get referred patients, from the community and other providers, the way that anybody would get referred. And then we work with the agencies that are servicing those folks to integrate the folks that are providing that care, their caregivers, their service coordinators and what have you, into the care that's actually being delivered. It's a unique model that allows us to take the insights and access that people in the home have and convert it into actionable events for medical care delivery in a way that the medical side of the house can reimburse for. So it is, I think, pretty unique. And it's very effective in terms of engaging the home in terms of improving quality of care.
So let's take a step back. Can you share with listeners what your healthcare background is, particularly on the home-based care side?
Sure. So I grew up in a home care family. My dad worked for a health plan. My mom is a social worker. Grandparents worked in healthcare as well. So healthcare is kind of in the blood. I ended up starting my healthcare career working for a company in New York called Visiting Nurse Service of New York. It's one of the oldest, largest nonprofit home care companies around. And I had the very weird entry point of implementing an episodic reimbursement program for home care, Medicare PPS, that I'm sure many people here know. So I really started my healthcare career from the standpoint of value-based home care. Over the past 20 years, I've had the ability to work on this from a variety of perspectives. I've been a operator of a plan. I've been a vendor that's focused on in-home assessments and care management. I've done episodes of care payments. But all of it has been really around this idea that the home is a very important, overlooked, and disconnected setting of care. And that, if you can engage the people that are there as part of the delivery system, you can actually create better outcomes as well as reduce cost and improve satisfaction and quadruple aim type things effectively. I'll give you one quick anecdote. When I was working at VMS, I was working on a project for one of their executives, and I had the ability to actually go out and do a whole bunch of home care visits, studying what happened in the home. And I remember being absolutely blown away by what these nurses and aides were doing. And I came back, a naive 20-something, talking to my boss about how great all this stuff was and what a difference it must have made. And, his comment was something to the effect of, wouldn't it be great if? And what came from that was the idea that, oh, wait a second, this part of the system actually isn't being used properly. And later on, I had another person there refer to home care as the caboose of healthcare. And I guess that's been one of the things that I've spent a lot of time thinking about and working on ever since.
Yeah. And I think that kind of, leads nicely into my next question, about inspiration. what inspired you to start Vesta Healthcare? I guess in other words, I'm trying to say, you know, what did you feel at the time was missing in the market, and what challenges were you trying to solve with Vesta?
Sure. So I want to be, you know, on the history of the company. I didn't start Vesta Healthcare per se. I was part of a team that took a prior company that was already marching in this direction and figured out how to take the lessons that it had learned and really grow and expand upon them. So tons of credit to the investors and the predecessor company who helped, you know, create this, you know, this company today. So when I came to what is today Vesta, I was drawn by the idea that this prior company, which, you know, was called Home Team, nobody probably remembers it at this point, it had created a service model that integrated home care aides with a centralized care management team and communicated with the family members around them, really trying to create an incredible experience for the aides and the caregivers and better care as a result, and deeply cared about how the aides, you know, were experiencing this. So, you know, while most providers would really just look at the patient and the family, they were looking at the aide and saying, if we treat the aide with respect and make the aide part of the team, you know, good things will happen, because if you take care of your people, they take care of people. I observed that myself and believed it, and believed that that was not broadly happening. By the way, I argue today it's not broadly happening. I think that if you look at the system and, you know, in general, it's still not a widely accepted reality. And I thought, hey, I think we can take something with this. I think that we can improve, you know, how care in the home works by doing a better job working with the people that are already in the home. And I was fortunate enough to have people that would back the idea. And I was fortunate enough to have, you know, folks who would work with me as we iterated on it and figured out how to get the business model right. And, you know, continue to be fortunate in that, you know, the tail of the tape so far, 6 years in, is that it's actually working pretty well. We are seeing great engagement. We're seeing high quality. We're seeing improved outcomes. We're actually distributing quality money to our agency partners. So I'm really proud of how things are coming together.
That's really great. And it's really interesting to hear a little bit more about, you know, the history of how Vesta came to be what it is today. I did want to ask you, though, you know, caregivers, whether informal family caregivers or caregivers working at home care agencies, are such a big piece of Vesta's puzzle. Why is that so?
Why is it that they're the biggest piece of the puzzle? Because they're the ones that have the most access and positions of trust. And, you know, we got into this with the idea of making healthcare better. And there's been a tremendous amount of investment and innovation in the system. But this, you know, caboose part of it, if you look from a dollar spend perspective and a population spend perspective, it's actually a very large caboose. It's kind of gigantic. It makes up a huge percentage of state Medicaid budgets. If you look at, you know, people that are, you know, older adults with functional limitations, the likelihood that you end up on Medicaid, you look at the size of the workforce, you know, you're talking about millions of paid aides, tens of millions of caregivers. It dwarfs almost anything else, but it really doesn't get a lot of focus. So, you know, we built a company and a program around the idea that enormous resource, which I've come to call the dark matter of the healthcare system, and I could go into why that is, you know, if we can engage it, we can do good things. So that's why it's the center.
I want to hear a little bit more about that dark matter of the healthcare system comment.
Sure. So if you look at the associated outcomes of people that consume long-term home-based care services, the amount of spend that goes against them is orders of magnitude larger than a non-medical population. I could get into sort of the details of the numbers, but think of it this way. A senior with chronic illnesses will cost about a quarter as a senior with chronic illnesses plus functional limitations. Now, people may scratch their heads on that and say, wait, how does that work? And the reason why is once you kick in those long-term care services, all of a sudden, now you've got the system paying for all those long-term care supports and services. Okay, that's great. People are getting care that they need. Obviously, they should be getting better outcomes out of that, right? You're just threw 3-4 times more money at the problem. You should be getting better outcomes. It turns out that it's actually the opposite. When you start throwing all this additional money at the problem, getting people the support that they need, the outcomes actually get worse. Now, why is that? The reason why, and this is why I call it the dark matter, is you've got a system that's oriented towards medical care for people where their primary care they're receiving is actually long-term care. And those two systems don't actually work together particularly well. They don't integrate particularly well. And they talk past each other. And when that happens, even though everybody is, you know, intending to do the right thing, you've got a lot of very well-meaning people, that miscommunication actually leads to bad handoffs and bad transitions and bad events that follow. So, you know, our idea was if you could harness that and you could take all that additional spend and point it towards health outcomes, not just the functional support, you could bend the cost curve on the other side, which actually would create a virtuous cycle, which bends the cost curve on the long-term side, because if you keep people healthier, they actually tend to deteriorate less. So we're seeing that. And that's why I call it the dark matter. If you look at this from the medical side of the system, and you talk to a medical provider about home care, they probably think you're talking about skilled care. They don't really know what's happening beyond that point. And if you talk to a home care provider about medical care, they probably don't have a lot of visibility to that either. So both sides of the system are dark to each other. And it goes deeper than that, because when you look at the payment side of this, the payment's also fragmented. You've got medical payers and long-term care payers. But then those, you even have more fragmentation beyond that. You have Medicaid and private long-term care. So it gets very fragmented, and the pieces can't see each other. So they end up working cross purposes.
I want to talk a little bit about funding now. Your company recently raised $65 million in funding. Can you walk Disrupt the listeners through Vesta's funding history and what this latest round of funding will enable the company to accomplish?
Sure. So Vesta Healthcare founded in 2019. And as I mentioned, we founded out of, you know, a prior company. So what we did was we raised our initial round of capital from, you know, some of the original investors, and you know, that would be what you would consider an A round. That was really designed to get us proof of concept. Can we demonstrate that we have a business that folks are interested in working with? So we did that, and then, you know, shortly thereafter, we ended up doing our B round. And that was really designed to help us scale, because we had some demonstration that what we were doing was working. The B round was designed to get us to a point where we had essentially unit economics, right? We knew that our business was working economically, so it would be viable in the long term. We hit some pretty rough market conditions over the past few years. I'm sure you guys have followed it. But, you know, the healthcare innovation landscape has been a very, very tough place to actually access capital in. And I'm really fortunate to have great investors and partners that have helped us along this journey. And we were able to grow and scale during that time. And then earlier this year, we were able to raise our C round, which is a growth round that's designed to help us digest all the opportunity that we've been, you know, that we've been developing over these past few years. So we've been growing very rapidly. You may have seen that we were on the Inc. 500, the top 10% of the Inc. 5000 for the fastest growing companies, almost 1,000% growth over the past 3 years. We have more than that lined up over the next few years. Growth is expensive. You have to hire, you have to invest. We've expanded our footprint geographically. We've expanded the programming that we can support. So, you know, in addition to our present models, you know, there's a new one called Guide coming out that we're going to participate in. There's other value-based aligned programs that we participate in. So all that requires investment. And what this round of investment is going to do is, you know, twofold. First is early on, we used debt to help finance some acquisitions that helped us catalyze our growth. So it retires that older debt. And then the equity portion of it is primary equity that we're using to, you know, grow the company to, you know, to the next stage.
One thing that you just touched on just now is expansion. So let's talk a little bit about Vesta's expansion. In 2021, the company was in 5 states. Now it's in 21 states. How have you expanded so rapidly, and where do you want to go next?
Yeah, so we're seeing patients in 12 states. We have 21 that we can see patients in. And what we're doing is basically following our referral patterns. So we don't ever enter a state without there being someone that's bringing us into the state. And the nature of our business is that you've got, you know, imperfect overlap between payers and providers. So we work with, you know, home care agencies that cover multiple states. As we, you know, start with them in one state and they want to expand with us, we go to, you know, the next state with them. When we get to the next state with them, we have to get to scale. So we apply for network participation. I'm really proud that we're, you know, in network with over 100 health plans at this point in time. So, you know, then we use the ability to, you know, be in that state with that partner as a catalyst to recruit other partners to work with us, which then does the same thing again and, you know, brings us into new geographies and we repeat it all over. So, you know, we're just following where the growth is taking us. And that's been the reason why it's happening so quickly.
What are some of the growth barriers that you're seeing in the market? And more importantly, how is Vesta navigating these challenges?
So first and foremost, for a company like ours, the biggest barrier to growth is understanding what we are. If you go and you talk to most participants in the system, they'd probably say, hey, we already do care management in some form or another. And they do. There's lots of care management out there. So if we're, you know, a different form of care management, or we're not care management at all, then what are we? So one of the things that we've had to learn how to do over the past years is tell our story, which is why I told it the way I did. We're a specialized medical group for people with long-term home care. We oversee and coordinate and supervise care in the home, and we engage the aides and caregivers as part of that. When you start to frame it in that sense, many payers will recognize that they don't have a provider and network that's doing this, so there's an access issue. And many providers will recognize that, you know, hey, they would benefit from this. This is something that could help them, you know, improve their own businesses and improve their own quality. So, you know, that's the first part. I used to have a boss that referred to that as an evangelical sale, because you actually have to evangelize what you're doing. People don't know what it is at first. The second part of it is just the inertia of the delivery system. If you've ever tried to get a contract with a payer, get a network, get anything through that stuff, it just takes a long time. You know, we come in through the front door in most places. So, you know, there's nothing fast about it. We have to get in network. We have to get credentialed. You have to recruit credentialed providers. You have to get to scale. So all of that takes a long time and a lot of resources, which again, back to having great partners to do it. But once it's in, it also tends to be pretty durable. So, you know, creates good foundations.
What are some of the key home-based care business opportunities right now, in your view?
Many. I think that the future of care in the home is in the earliest innings right now. I think that, you know, the ability for technology to rapidly upskill and scale what can happen, the ability of, you know, better information flow will enable much more personalized approaches that do a much better job of using the you know, the home setting as an actual setting of care. I think that, you know, payment models have to continue to innovate to support that. But you know, if I am an entrepreneur focusing on the home, so I can't say if I was an entrepreneur focusing on the home. But if I were, you know, looking at ways to, you know, continue to expand what folks do, I would be looking at how to get skilled agencies to the top of their license, how to move end-of-life care into the home on a greater basis, how to upskill, you know, the non-skilled to get them to the top of their ability levels. I would be looking at, you know, virtual models that can augment, you know, home-based models so you can get greater scale out of them. I would be looking at personalized approaches for, you know, management of medications. I would be looking at, you know, ways to, you know, really simplify, you know, getting things like DME into the home. I think there's so many different places here where, you know, in the home, you can do things that will ultimately be higher quality and lower cost. And then behind that, I think there's also a ton of back-end stuff. Right now, there is a lot of administrative burden that happens around home-based care. I think as, you know, the system gets smarter on this and understands what it's doing, it will be able to eliminate, you know, a lot of the paperwork and back and forth that, you know, frankly exists because of the complexity of the system, but doesn't add any value.
As CEO, what goals do you have for the near-term future?
So, first and foremost, I want us to clearly demonstrate the value that integrated care in the home creates. We're publishing right now. There's still too much evangelizing happening around this. So I've met some folks who are innovating around similar models, and I cheer for them. We have to get to a place where the notion that, you know, care in the home that's not integrated is an anathema, right? That you would always expect that care in the home is going to be part of just care in general. So first and foremost, I want to, you know, complete that task where, you know, payers and providers alike, that this is the expectation. Secondly, and, you know, perhaps this is the one I should have said first, is to make sure that the business that we're running is sustainable. I run a business. I have to make sure that what I'm doing, you know, works economically. So, you know, I got to be really careful as we grow that we don't take on too much. And I got to be really careful that, that we continue to perform well. So, you know, the second part as a CEO is run a great company. And I would say the third part of it is, make sure that I am a very valuable partner, right? I can demonstrate that there's value to what we're offering and I can run a great company, but if I'm not a valuable partner, I'm going to lose my partners. So I need to make sure that the folks that I'm working with, on the provider and the payer side, are experiencing the value that we set out to create for them. And in my mind, that it does extend all the way to the caregivers. So, you know, whether you're a family member or an aide in the system, I believe there should be, you know, a material difference to being supported by someone like us, where you feel greater access, greater support, greater control, greater participation, as a result of it. If we're doing our job well, we're not just taking information, but we're providing the information back as well.
And as sort of a follow-up and my last question, what's one long-term lofty goal you want to accomplish?
One long-term lofty goal that I'd like to accomplish. I would like to accomplish the ability to decommoditize home care, which is a big lofty goal. I would like to have the ability for consumers, payers, providers, including the aides themselves, to be able to differentiate between an agency or a service model that is going to make things better versus one that's just going to churn widgets. And I imagine a world in the not too distant future where the best participants in the system, if you know that you can get home care that is great for your CHF, well, you might be willing to pay a little more for that. And the system might be willing to pay a little more for that because it actually means that person's going to have fewer hospitalizations and slower decline and better satisfaction. So I look forward to my big, hairy, and I chuckled because I think people probably think I'm nuts on this. My big, hairy, audacious goal on this is to decommoditize home care.
Well, Randy, thank you for joining Disrupt today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciated the discussion.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletter at homehealthcarenews.com or consider becoming an HHCM Plus member. I'm Joyce Famakinwa, and this has been a production of WTWH Media.